It's an argument among the philosophers. But Chazal had the same argument. Questions whether there is a safer man. Can a person, under very careful surveillance and self-observation, allow himself a certain amount of ego satisfaction? Or is it the dangerous emotion, and once he gets involved in that, he's going to he's liable to jeopardize his own perfection? That's the machlokas. So the Rambam concludes, he says like this, he says that the conclusion of the statement, he says, ma'od, ma'od, echor, let's go. You'll say. Umachmas chomar ovan azeh omar ma'od ma'od evi shval ruach. Kuloma, sheroi lecho lulumod mutsil atzmachot, shetosas agaiva, al yidei shetisbonim bachos aguf, shesofu liyos rima. So he says like this, so he says, shetikvas enosh rima. This is, of course, man's ego is very much tied in with his fantasy of immortality. That's the expression of the fantasy of immortality stems directly from his egocentricity, his emotion of egocentricity. So that's why he says, Chazal said, that a person should be able to reflect on the fact that he's mortal and that it's only a matter of time that he ceases to exist. And because of that, and through that, he can remove the egocentricity. That's the biggest remover of the egocentricity is his mortality. That's the greatest, the reality, recognition of the reality of his own mortality. That is the greatest reducer of his egocentricity. And a person should attach himself to this fact that he is going to die and that his stay on this planet is a very short one, and this will reduce his egocentricity. But the thing is, you see, what you have to understand is like this. What you have to understand between the lines here is a very important thing. In other words, that a person can't just, you know, reflect on the fact that he's going to die and through that achieve perfection. Because what happens is that a person can be thrown into depression through such a thing. There are many, many people who are involved in learning Sifrei Musar. Oftentimes they become very depressed. As a matter of fact, that's why Moshe Feinstein didn't have Musar in his yeshiva. Because it is related that when he was a young man, he studied Musar and he became very depressed. And he said, this is not the right approach. So, he didn't have a Musar Seder in his yeshiva. That he one time said that by your basic chorus, he one time said, look, he says, every person dies, He says, but God gave us the Koach HaShikcha, we forget about that. So if we always think about that, we'll be very depressed. But the truth of the matter is that it is true that if a person would, even though Chazal say a person should Yaski Yom HaMisa, he's about to do an Avera, so as an antidote, he should be Maski Yom HaMisa, and it's worthwhile to go into a temporary depression to avoid the Avera, then he'll come out of the depression. But as a constant thing, it would seem to be a very depressing kind of suggestion. So what does it say, really? Ma'od ma'od evi shval ruach shetikvas enosh rima, and the Rambam says that this is the solution. I think what it means like this, there are, what the Rambam means, what the Chazal mean, is that there's two different ways of perceiving a person. Every person knows he's going to die. But there are two ways of approaching it. You see, as a person increases his knowledge and gains a certain maturity, the idea of his death shouldn't have such a sad type of affect in it. A less mature person, death is a very scary thing because, of course, there's a tremendous amount of egocentricity involved. But as a person matures, a person becomes more of a chacham and learns to accept reality, the idea of his death is something which he should learn to accept. You see, his philosophical perfection should substitute for his psychological deficiency. You see, and being able to accept it. So really, it's a measure. It is a measure of a person's perfection. How, with what level of reality he could perceive his own demise. It's a certain. It indicates a certain perfection. Now, the more a person directs his energies towards chokhmah, towards knowledge, the less painful that piece of information becomes. And when Chazal say that a person should tikvas enesh rima, that a person should tisbonim ba'achas aguf shesof aliyos rima, what it means is it doesn't mean in an emotional attack. An emotional attack is a dangerous kind of method. Think about his death and become very sad and depressed. That is not what Chazal means. What they mean is it's a process of growth. That as a person gets older, as a person gains knowledge and gains a chokhmah, and he realizes that he's a part of an entire system, even death itself, which is a part of that system, a person starts to realize cannot be evil, cannot be bad. And he learns to accept the fact that his existence is temporary, and it doesn't make him sad. It doesn't make him say it. It's a different kind of a way of accepting it. It's a different kind of a plane. It's on a philosophical plane. That is a healthy thing, and that is a good thing, and that's something that raises a person to a higher level. But it doesn't mean to say, simply to take out a sefer of Musa and just imagine and envision the Yom HaMisa when you aren't ready for it. But a person should strive towards an acceptance of reality which incorporates in it the fact that his existence is only a temporary one. You can have a realistic attitude towards the fact that it is temporary. You see, Chazal were very much in favor of that. Chazal, in general, that's what Chazal say, that Hayalma ki luladani, this world is like a big wedding, the Gemara says. Chatof vachol. Reb and What it means is a person should have a realistic view. Should be able to accept a realistic view about the temporality of his existence, and it shouldn't be a disturbing thing. It should come from a maturity which is an acceptance of reality. And what Chazal say is that attitude and that maturity and being able to come to grips with the facts of reality and the fact that our existence is not permanent shouldn't be disturbing, but on the contrary, it should be something which a person can use to enjoy his life more, strangely as it sounds, because he has the correct perception of what his life is in reality. We can only enjoy life insofar as we partake of a realistic view. When we don't partake of reality, we can't enjoy life because we can't act properly. So really, the truth of the matter is that insofar as we increase ourselves in terms of philosophical perfection, you see, We increase our anava, and we increase our maturity of outlook and an acceptance of our reality, and in that way, strangely enough, we increase the enjoyment that we attain from life to a very, very great degree. When Yadis maintained that Kate said, "Oyev v'simachon," "Lahaf teis Hashem l'kecha," Kate said, "Oyev v'simachon." So the Rambam, of course, you know, with the Avas Hashem when possible through Hasagas Chochmas Hashem and Rosav. But the originally Rambam's really paraphrasing a Chazal. But the Rashi has the Chazal right in Dvarim, where it says Vaschana. So Rashi says that same thing, this one. So it means to say, what Chazal means to say, what Yadda says, is that there is no other way. There is no other way. It's not that any other method is purely a horizontal. So the only way you can make a Kadosh Baruch is only through Vayadvar Me'ela. Is only through Talmud Torah, through Chachmas Hashem. There is no other way. Any other way is simply a horizontal. the difference between the halachic avodah zarah, like the Rambam considers the Arabs not halachically owed the avodah zarah. I don't know if you say that about today's Arabs, but that doesn't mean to say that means there's a difference between halachic avodah zarah and philosophical avodah zarah. Philosophical avodah zarah, they definitely are the avodah zarah, because they can't be makir mishum avodah zarah. Impossible, because they don't have the root, they don't have nothing, no approach. Since there's no other approach, that's the result has to do that. Bomanechavo. Shamis Goa is the person that's misgoa is Goahu Atma Lutnashem Kavodazar Atma. The person who's misgoa Lutnashem is just like a vote of itself. Lumdum Mashanam Rukhulachem and Adam. So the thing is that you see that Yahadus is in direct opposition to the deification of man. The direct opposition. Now the deification of man can take place on different levels. Just because a person accepts a supreme being doesn't mean that he's excluded from the deification of man. On the contrary, the people who Hitler Yimach Shemo believed that he was divinely ordained by a higher force. A person who simply accepts a higher force doesn't mean that he has any part. It's not God. It's not the true God. And it's it doesn't necessarily mean that he is an honor. On the contrary, what happens with these people is that they identify with a super force. What they're looking for is their own omnipotence. But they realize that it fails. So the way that they retrieve it is by identifying with a super force. See, and the biggest Rishi Olam did that. Worst Rishoyim. I mean, including the church, always claim that they accept a higher being. Nevertheless, they were the worst Rishayim and the worst egomaniacs. The reason is because that is a mere fact that they say that they accept a higher force doesn't mean anything. If they identify with that higher force, as a matter of fact, they are more Balei Gaiva than atheists. An atheist has to, at least say, has limitations. These people have no limitations because they identify with a higher force, and via that higher force, no one can affect the higher force, and they're identified with that. So that's the highest gaiva. That's the kavod azar. That's the kavod azar. That's what the Rambam said. Is who atzmo kavod azar. So yadus, the method of yadus of maintaining that we have no concept of God. And the only way we can approach him is through his chachma, the Torah, chachma. The chachma is Hashem. This means that this is the only way that leads to anava, and leads to a true recognition of the true God. But those other forces that these people claim that they're under is really nothing more than a projection of their own gaiva, of their own ego. And it's pure avodah zarah. It's in direct opposition. And that's why really Amalek is the nation, the characteristic of Amalek. If you learn the stories and you look through with the part of Chazal say that they came directly after Yetzias Mitzrayim, Shekoch of Aderach. And if you look through the Megillah, you see that what is the characteristic of Amalek? The characteristic of Amalek is the deification of man. That's the characteristic of Amalek. You see? And it's a refusal from a refusal on the part of man to accept his insignificant status insofar as reality is concerned, insofar as what exists. In terms of Chachmas Hashem, which ultimately is in terms of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the insignificance of man. He's like the Rambam says that he's a Briya Shvela Vafela. On the contrary, it goes against the agreement. They must have a system in which there could be self-deification, deification of man. That's why that's the whole story with Haman. Because Haman was what was the pasuk say over there by Haman? That it's Omer by the Shah HaMalach, and by the pasuk say. That's a Vayar Haman ki in Mordechai Korei Mishlach Avavavi Melei Haman Chema Vayivez Beino Beshloch Yob Morcha Levado Yidlos Am Mordechai Rake Hashem Allah Hashmi Yisrael Yehudim Hashem Chomach Vayashrech Am Mordechai. So the point is that he recognizes that this philosophy, the philosophy of the Jew, does not allow for any deification of man. That was what destroyed him. That's what he couldn't tolerate. And that's really the mark of the Jew is his recognition that whatever man may place such tremendous importance on is all nonsense, basically. It's all nonsense. Okay? And the Amalek is the exact opposite. Amalek is the deification of man. Okay? That's the whole battle between the constant battle between Amalek Yodo Case Ko. No Homo Rashem Amalek Nidor Dor. Aina Kise Shalom Acha Tumcha Amalek. Okay? That's what I mean. You say it's impossible to have a recognition of God as long as that philosophy of the deification of man is exists. That's basically what it is. An interesting thing. But if you look at the psukim, it's a strange some psukim here that are very difficult to understand. It says that in the beginning, it says Mordechai Yodas Kol Shenatz. All right, Reka Mordechai is Gadil B'Sak Leifer. Leifer Zach Yivis Zach Gadol Amor. Leyavo Ad Lefnei Shar Melach Kein Lovo Shar Melach B'Vur Sok. So he didn't want to jeopardize his life at that point. Then it says. Right? He sent the Godim to remove his sackcloth. That sounds very funny. Because first what happened was, and then it says, So that's the way she started her dialogue with Mordechai. But what was the original thing? What did she do originally? Originally, she heard, so it says, she came very upset. Very frightened. So what is this about the taveu that she told Atishlach Begodim? Mahal Bishes Mordechai, Elohos Esaka Mel Vokibam. What did she send the Begodim for? What was the purpose of that? She sent the Begodim that Mordechai should take off to remove the Sakvaifer and she put on these Begodim. What was the purpose of that? This is a Vokibam. We didn't accept it. Then, Batik Restalat Soch. Right? So she wanted to, so apparently first she didn't know what it was and she sent things to the garden. That doesn't make any sense. She should have asked right away, what's going on? Mazev al mazev. Why did she first send it? It doesn't make any sense. First she sent the garden that he should remove the big day sock and he should put on the big day malchus. And what was the purpose of this gesture? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And there's a big problem over there. So one little person asked the question. It's an open question, though, when you read through the psukim. Did she know or didn't she know? If she didn't know, so what's she sending you to the garden for? Elamai, she knew, so then her response after she knew was, Kol avdei ha-melech v'chol am medinos ha-melech yodim, asher kol ish v'yishu, you can't go lifnei ha-melech, achas dasa l'hamis. If you went to the courtyard of the king, he really had a tzar din to be killed. The only thing is, the king could extend the pardon. But basically, to be there, well, you were chayav nisa by the king. So that's what she should have said right away. What is it? And then later, apparently, she didn't tell him to take off the sock later. So what kind of a maneuver was this? This is a big problem in the Megillah. What was the first intention? You see? It's a big kasha. I mean, it's a little kasha. But I saw one chazal that maybe can answer this question. As an interesting chazal, chazal say on the pasuk that it says, Lahagidlo, pasuk says, Vayaged lo Mordechai eis kol asher karo. Vayaged lo Mordechai eis kol asher karo. So Mordechai told Hasoch everything that occurred to him. Eis kol asher karo. Alright? So, well, the thing to understand is what's going on in this psukim over there. So, like I said, I saw one of them the first one. I saw one chazal over there that might, explain somewhat what exactly took place. Because it says like this. It says that Vayaged lo Mordechai eis kol asher karoho. Eis kol asher karoho. So Chazal say that he said Ben Karoho, I forget the lesson, Ben Karoho Nifkabi or something like that, I forget the lesson. That the son of Karoho is the one that is causing the problem. So what does Karoho mean? It was a reference to Asher Korcho Baderach. It was a reference to Amalek. You see? So then, if that's the case, so you can understand what happened in that incident. You see? When she saw that he was wearing, she found out that he was wearing sock vapor. So he's wearing sock vapor, so she realized that there's some tremendous political difficulty. So the Chacham Amalek alone, he's not very frightened. But she sent the Begadim Lahalbishes Mordechai. What she sent the Begadim was like this. The Begadim meant that she knew that she had power. So she said, what she sent him was, look, you don't make a public demonstration, I'll take care of it. You see? But then he sent back a message. He said, this is Ben Karoho. Ben Karoho means this. There are a lot of political difficulties. And political difficulties can be worked out. But not with Amalek. You see? Ben Karoho means that the one... This is Asher Korcho Baderach. This is not a regular, normal difficulty where they want money from the Jews or whatever. They're not happy with them. Different problems, all kinds of political problems. That's already a right. Then we shouldn't make a public demonstration. But if it's Ben Karoho, if it is Amalek, which means that their whole philosophy, their whole philosophy is against what the Jews stands for, which is the insignificance of man. And they represent the deification of man. They have to uproot any remnant of that idea that man, with all the things that he makes important and carries on and considers to be such of such significance, that this whole idea is crazy, and that man is basically an insignificant creature, and the only thing to do is perceive somewhat the godless HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a very small and not even clear way. This. These people, Amalek, will never tolerate to have such a people in existence, because it's against their whole emotion, which is the deification of man, which was represented by Haman. So then she understood that this diplomacy is not going to work over here. Because here all the energies are directed simply intent on the destruction of Klal Yisrael. And there's no way that you can maneuver in such a the only way that the Klal Yisrael can be saved from Amalek is through Hashgachas Hashem. You see, that's a different... That's what... So, this happened the next day. When did this whole thing occur? Was Yitul Pur was on the 13th of Nisan. And the day was supposed to be, the appointed day was the 13th of Adar. So actually they had a tremendous amount of time, like almost a year, right? But he made her go that very day, the next day, immediately, not to wait. He wanted to wait. Time warp. Ah, we'll do something. He said no. He said that if she would do that, so then Ahasuerus would know already that she could live with this idea. And then he won't listen to her anymore. And destroy the Jews. We'll keep a little piece of something. But she had to demonstrate that she cannot live with that idea. If she puts her life in jeopardy, she cannot live with that idea even for a moment. Then he knew that there's no way of appeasing her. I think she got through with his deal. You see? That's what Mordechai, that was Mordechai's idea. The situation of Amalek required desperate action. So, 180 days, body. Statement shows that the man was a tremendously ostentatious. But the thing is that it's a different kind of ego, apparently, than the ego of a Haman. A Haman is an inherent property. But Ahasuerus, having wealth and power really doesn't satisfy a person unless he can show somebody else. And for himself, he doesn't even, a person doesn't need it. It's not part of human needs. So that's so therefore his gaiva was in order to was a part of his taiva and his power. It was all a part of that. Show it to somebody else, otherwise that's no value. But that wasn't an inherent religion of deification of man, which was really what Haman was. Okay. So that's why the chancellor was Esther Malka. Okay? Esther Malka. It's an interesting thing that Chazal say that Mordechai recognized that this may be the hand of the Ashgacha. There's a pasuk that seems to say that he definitely did. That says, "Mi yodea em leis kazos yigal malchut." But maybe this is the Ashgacha. But it's funny, Rashi doesn't interpret the pasuk that way. Rashi does the pasuk the other way, differently. It says, "Mi yodea em leis kazos yigal malchut." "Mi yodea im yachpots boch hamelach l'shono haba'a shehu's man hariga." "Mi yodea im leis kazos," if at this time next year, the melech will still like you. "Leis kazos shehu haya omei b'nisan is man hariga ba'adu l'shono haba'a." He got Lamalchus in Tagi'i Ligdula She'at Bo'asha. If at that time, a year from now, really Rashi, I mean, as our time with Lashon HaPasuk, Rashi changed the Pasuk. Apparently Rashi held that Mordechai wouldn't say such a thing. Mi'a Deyam Eis Kadosh He got Lamalchus. How do you know that's Gacha? You can't say. Even as it does learn that way, plain shot in the Pasuk. But Rashi apparently went out of his way to learn differently. Apparently Rashi held that even Mordechai couldn't say that there's such an argument. Who knows if this is the person doesn't know. I mean, you don't know what that is. The person has no right, to audacious even to make the statement to say that this may be the Ashgacha. It's audacious, and that's what Rashi holds. Rashi has been shot in the past. The person has no right to say that maybe this is the Ashgacha. Interesting. But, the concept that it was Ashgacha, it would seem that the destruction of Amalek has to be can only take place through Ashgacha Zazel. I don't think there's any question. Ashgacha Zazel. According to Rav Chaim, Amalek doesn't have to, is not a biological genetic phenomenon. In other words, it has certain characteristics. The characteristics of the deification of man. I would say that's the primary characteristic. And the refusal to accept that man is an insignificant creature. Okay? You see with Hitler, you might have the exact same type of mentality. The mentality of a mother, a certain mentality. A different kind of a crisis. A crisis which required Esther to to make a move which jeopardized the life. Actually, it was the way Chazal learned, it was a tremendous personal messias nefesh on the part of Esther. That's a kasher avadati avadati. As Chazal say that she was really Mordechai's wife, and as Chazal says that omedes mecheko shel Achashverosh, the kovelas, the yosheves pecheko shel Mordechai. So all along she functioned as Mordechai's wife. And he Achashverosh didn't know, because she wasn't honest. But the moment that she went into the courtyard, that was Baratzin. From that time on, she was Netzer on Mordechai. He could not be with him anymore. So, as husband and wife, she actually gave up Kasher Avadati Avadati. She gave up a personal relationship with Mordechai. What it shows that this idea of Gaiva is really like at the center. The whole idea of the distortion of reality through Gaiva is really the center of the others. And really it's the expresses the interplay between Amalek and Bar Yisrael. Start with. Okay. Ben Azay Omer, have the rots limits for Kala Kevachamura. Ubareach min ha'avera. Why? She mitzvah gareres. Mitzvah of avera gareres avera. She schar mitzvah mitzvah. She schar avera avera. Let's take the first part. Have you rots the mitzvah kala kebachamura? What does it mean, have you rots the mitzvah kala kebachamura? It seems something that doesn't make sense in terms of practicality. I mean, a person knows that a mitzvah chamura is much more important. The Torah says it's more chamura. How do you say a person should be rushed for a mitzvah kala just like a chamura? In a chamura, we have a whole system, there's a whole hierarchy of mitzvahs and averis, and there's a chayvei koras. The kalas and chamuras, in terms of kapora and onshin, there's a difference. There's a mitzvah kala and mitzvah chamura. So how could a person run with the same intensity to a mitzvah kala as to a mitzvah chamura? Okay? It's a difficult statement. So the Rashi we ask is like this. Why have a rutz with mitzvah kala? He says, Shemitoch kach tovo liyodchom mitzvah chamura. Okay? Lefisha mitzvah gereres mitzvah. Vekach avera gereres avera v'kilkal kula. Alright? So apparently Rashi agrees that really that it's impossible to be rushed to mitzvah kala inherently, like a mitzvah chamura. But Rashi says that the idea is that if you're not rushed to a mitzvah kala, so then eventually you're going to miss a mitzvah chamura. That's what Rashi says. Okay. Amma says, "Va'bi'anu pirush zeh ha'mayma b'perek yud mi'sanhedrin, u'kfar he'iru chachomim aleihem ha'sholom al chiddush nifla b'torah." There's an astonishing chiddush in the Torah. Yesh bo zeros al ma'isa ha'mitzvos, and this chiddush contains in it a strong exhortation for asiyas ha'mitzvos. Ru amro, pasul like this: Oz yavdil Moshe shalosh orim be'eva hayadim. That says, the pasuk says that Moshe set aside three cities in the Avar Yarden, which were for the purpose of Arimikla. That's it. Okay. So it runs like this: Biyadua she'enon mo'ilos she'loyia bohen din Arimikla ad she'yuvdulu ha'shol ha'sholos ha'cheros be'baritz Yisrael. But the halacha was that those three in Avar Yarden wouldn't be effective until the other three in Eretz Yisrael was set aside. That was before Moshe Rabbeinu entered Eretz Yisrael, so he couldn't do it. Umro, so why did he do the first three? Umro, this is how it gets. Yodeya hoya Moshe Rabbeinu olav ha-sholom. She'in shalosh orim she'be'evar yarden koltos. Ad she'yuzlu ha-sholosh she'be'er Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu knew very well that the three that he set aside will not be able to be effective. He can't accomplish anything by setting aside those three. Until when? until the other three in Eretz Yisrael are set aside. Because it says, Shenema, Sheish Ari Mikla Tiena. So the Torah halacha requires Sheish, six. Six is the entity. Less than six is nothing. There's no sea, it's three Ari Mikla. Ari Mikla are a halachic entity, and a halachic entity is six. Three is not good. So therefore, there's no reason actually for Moshe Rabbeinu to set aside those three when they wouldn't be affected. The Omnam, Hizil Elu, he set aside these, why not Nesha Omar? Holy Bo'a Mitzvah Li Yodaya Kaimena. Since I have the opportunity of doing this mitzvah, so I'll fulfill it. The In Kayotze Bozeh B'Moshe Rabbeinu Olav HaSholah. And if this is the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, Masig Hamitas Sholeim Shebishleimim, highest level of human perfection, if this can be said about Moshe Rabbeinu, if this is the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, Nichsaf Lahosif Chatzi Mitzvahs Alsei, I'll call my Losser Shleimuso. So he still did half of the mitzvah, and with all his perfection, so you don't have to say that a person, people who are diseased like we are, we're not on that level, we're suffering from the diseases of the soul, we certainly should run to do a mitzvah. Okay, you have to understand, what is this? It's a chazal. The Rambam says that it's chazal. It's telling us a chiddush nifla. Chiddush nifla b'Torah. On Z is a mitzvah. What is the chazal telling? What is the chazal telling? Interesting chazal. You have to understand, I mean, really, why did Moshe Rabbeinu set aside the first three? Then it doesn't do anything. So it's not even a mitzvah. I mean, it's not, the analogy is not, exactly. Because over here it says, have a mitzvah kala kebachamura. Which means to say, at least it's a mitzvah. But what Moshe Rabbeinu did wasn't even a mitzvah mitzvah. Because the Maisan Mitzvah is Sheishore Miklatiyana. That's be six. Three alone doesn't do anything. And yet Moshe Rabbeinu said he did it. Harul Bol Mitzvah the other Akaimena. What does it mean? A mitzvah came from Ayan Obi Makayana Mitzvah. And what is there's no Kiyama Mitzvah? We know halachically there's no Kiyama Mitzvah until you fulfill all the requirements. A person will go pick up a lulav and he won't be Mekayim who will set aside a lulav. I mean, or do a mice on mitzvah, pick up a lulav, and he won't pick up an esrog in the other two meters. It's worthless. So what kind of a mitzvah did he accomplish? Since this mitzvah came to my hands, I'll be Mekayim. That's not even a mitzvah. So think like this. Be on the right track. The thing, the Rambam says it's a chiddush nifla. The zeros are mitzvahs. What does that mean to say? It means that there's something very different, very special about a halachic action. That's what it means. It means that an action that the halachic action is an action which moves the person towards God, towards perfection, because of its nature, the concept of halacha. See, halacha has a very registers in a very special way on a person's soul. Because halacha means that the person is doing an act, a rational action, which was dictated by God. So it's an action in which he's following God's will, but not in an emotional way, you see, but through the medium of chachmah. Halacha is a very, the Rambam doesn't spell it out exactly, but the Rambam's halacha is a unique phenomenon. You see, halacha is a unique phenomenon. That's what we mentioned in I spoke about the Pidyon HaPen, that the Mishchu Kula Chantzon, Reisi means, what does it mean? God will see the dam. The dam is on the inside, specifically on the inside, not on the outside. Reisi as a dam fasachti aleichem. Why? Reisi shani roa shatam as oskim b'mitzvosai.
That's a chavasa.
And you roesh at them oskim b'mitzvosa. Doesn't mean God sees the dam. I mean, a kol gola lefanof. He doesn't have to go from house to house, take a look at the dam. It means a kol gola lefanof. But for Isias Adam, and he roesh at them asukim b'mitzvosa ufasachti alecha. It means that the maisa ha-mitzvah is structured for human nature in such a way that the action is the ultimate means of perfection of man. Of course, it means that a person has to have a concept of what a halachic action is. A person is an amoret, who wouldn't work for him, you see. A person has a concept, has knowledge of halacha, and understands halacha, understands the mitzvah, and is capable of performing an action, a true halachic action, on the true level of what halacha really is. So for such an individual, the halachic entity was created by God, you see, as the ultimate means of perfecting the human soul, the emotions, his actions. The entire soul was perfected by an individual performing, conforming to the halachic action. Halachic action is a special means because it was created by Kadosh Baruch Hu. The halachic concept, the halachic entity. Halachic entity perfects. But what perfects in the halachic entity? It's not the kiyum mitzvah. The maisa mitzvah. The maisa mitzvah perfects. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu says. Even though the kiyum wouldn't take place, in terms of kiyum mitzvah, that's something else. That's not the door mitzvah, the kiyum mitzvah. But you would think, since it's only a kiyum, only where there's a kiyum mitzvah, then I should be involved. But let's say, for instance, there is no kiyum mitzvah. So the pasuk says, why did Moshe Rabbeinu set aside those three arim? Because he said, Hol ubo mitzvah liyadai akaimeno. Hol ubo mitzvah liyadai akaimeno. Means to say that Moshe Rabbeinu said that this is an opportunity for me to perfect myself through the halachic medium, through the medium of halacha. So he did the maisa ha-mitzvah. It was a maisa ha-mitzvah, because then later the other three in the Torah, the maisa ha-mitzvah was. But there's no kiyum. But the maisa ha-mitzvah, Moshe Rabbeinu said that this, he didn't have to do it. He didn't have to do it. You know, if he didn't do it, it wouldn't be enough errors. No, he couldn't even, because there's no, if you're in a situation where there's no kiyum ha-mitzvah, so there's no chiyuv to do it. You wait till the situation arises, then you can be mavdu sheish arim. Then you do it. Halachically. But Moshe Rabbeinu did it because he felt that the maisa ha-mitzvah itself, the asiyas ha-mitzvah, will perfect him. Will lead to his perfection. That's what the Rambam says, it's chiddush nifla ba'asiyas ha-mitzvos. It means that the halachic action was created by God in such a way that it is the ultimate tool and means of human perfection. Yes, to do halachic action. That is the ultimate perfection of man. To such a degree that even Moshe Rabbeinu, who certainly was even, you have a person who's part of the mitzvah, if he's a terasam nasa, Moshe Rabbeinu is a don and a viyam. Even such a person, as a don and a viyam, can still gain perfection in certain situations and not see us on the mitzvah. That's what he's saying, the chiddush mitzvah. That's what Ram says. If the halachic action is a means of perfection for the Adon and Nevi'im, Kavachoma for us, that we suffer from diseases of the soul, certainly the halachic action is a mitzvah. So that's what it means. Have a rutz l'mitzvah kala kebachamura. What does it mean, have a rutz l'mitzvah kala kebachamura? It means to say that a person, of course there's mitzvahs kalas and chamuras, no question about that. But in terms of person should be, if a person is interested in perfection, so he should recognize in every halachic activity that this is the ultimate means of human perfection. So then he's a rutz l'mitzvah kala kebachamura, doesn't make any difference. He's a rutz because he's interested in perfection. So any opportunity that he has for a halachic action, he takes advantage of it. That's what that's the Rambam said. It seems to be a contradiction, but it's not. The fact that the Rasha Nasa is part of the halachic, it means to say that a person that's the Rasha Nasa is part of from certain mitzvahs, but not all. Certain mitzvahs part of from because of his involvement in Talmud Torah of a writer, but it doesn't mean to say that a gavra is on such a level that there won't be a situation where a asiyas mitzvah will be a perfection for him. Certain situation. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu did his maisa with a certain situation. We don't understand, you know, we don't understand Moshe Rabbeinu's cheshbonos in terms of asiyas maisa. But the pasuk tells you that even the highest person can be in a situation where for him the halacha, the medium of halacha, will be an instrument of perfection. Kalos and chamuris is in terms of the system. In terms of the system, it's kalos chamuris. But in terms of imperfection, you know, there wouldn't be a difference. In terms of imperfection, there wouldn't be a difference. The same perfection, because the halachic medium is a means, an instrument of perfection. That's why the Rambam says, why you have this chazal. Because people don't think, people think in terms of, yeah, it's an important mitzvah, I cannot do it. Yeah. But I don't think in terms of the mitzvah being a medium of perfecting the soul, mitzvah done properly is the highest, is the only instrument that can perfect the person in the highest degree. Of course, like I said, it has to be a person that has the understanding of what halacha is. I mean, if he doesn't understand what halacha is not going to really help him that much. I mean, he has to... It's in Voschanon Shlishi. That was after God told Moshe Rabbeinu will never enter Eretz Yisrael. Voschanon Shem Be'Yisrael Lo'ima. Lo'suha Lava Lo'yad Nazar. He was told and he accepted that was it. There's no way that he can enter Eretz Yisrael. So the prophet says, Oz Yavdil Moshe Shalosh Aram Be'Evar Yadim Mizrach HaShamayim. So it means to say at that time, Moshe Rabbeinu, even though he knew that there was no way that he would be able to enter Eretz Yisrael, but it didn't interfere with his love of Asiyas HaMitzvah's recognition of the value of Asiyas Mitzvah, and he went ahead, and it was Mavdil the first three. An interesting thing. Most of the person says, yep, I can't go in, that's it, I'll do it. Negative, you wouldn't be too happy about that. No, just the opposite. That was Yavdil Moshe Shalosh Aram. You can't go in, you could never, he was punished, and you could never enter Israel. He could never fulfill his goal in terms of Klal Yisrael. And still, the Maisa Mitzvah was there. Maisa mitzvah was a maisa mitzvah in the area which precisely he was prevented from his own entering Eretz Yisrael and his accomplishments in terms of Klal Yisrael. So then what he did was, instead of being disappointed about it, on the contrary, he did a maisa mitzvah. He was mavdil the first three arm, the halachic activity, engaged in halachic activity, which is the highest means of perfection. It's an interesting thing. Oh, is Yavdil Moshe Shalom. The point is, instead of being despondent about his inability to enter Eretz Yisrael, he directed his energy towards Asiyas HaMitzvah. It's a mitzvah which will only be concluded by Yeshua ben Nun when he completes the Shaykh. That would explain, I just want to mention that point, that would explain the idea that Tarasim Naso, means Tarasim Naso is Derech Klal. Tarasim Naso is Derech Klal. Derech Klal Tarasim Naso. He's puppet. But in specific, where a person has an imperfection, the only way that he could rise to a higher level vis-a-vis the imperfections through the halachic medium. You see? And this was with regard to Moshe Rabbeinu's own imperfection, because it had to do with his kinesial arts. the member of Ben Azai, according to the way Rabbeinu Yonah understands. Okay. Now, so Ben Azai said, "Every rotzel mitzvah kalika b'chamura." You should run after a small mitzvah, just like a very important mitzvah. All right. So he said that that certainly in the Torah there are mitzvahs that are on different levels. There's kalas and chamuras. There are mitzvahs that are less important in terms of onshim, and there's mitzvahs that are more severe, more important, like Shabbos and Arayis. So you can't just say they're all the same. They're not all the same. But the concept is, like the Rambam says, the way the Rambam learned the Pshat was that insofar as the mitzvah functioning as an instrument of perfection, so even a mitzvah kala functions as an instrument of perfection. The mitzvah is the ultimate action created for man, which is perfectly created for his nature to bring him to perfection. Because it's constructed of, it's not simply a ceremonial act, but it's an action which partakes of Chachmas Hashem, and through that medium he reaches and improves himself and reaches the greatest heights. That's what the Rambam says. On the other ones, Rabbeinu Yonah goes on a different path. Rabbeinu Yonah says like this. Now, what does it mean, mitzvah ketana? He says, Tibasosa, the mitzvah ketana of Pamachas, the miskar of Hashem, or margulas rucha lavodasa. The nikla bain of lasos mitzvah acharas. Sheesh batarach, negad rishono, yosamat, and neshekar hugul tivul and lachza mitzvah. So Rabbeinu Yonah says that once he does a mitzvah kala, so it changes his nature. The mitzvah changes his nature. And therefore, puts him in a state in which he is capable of doing a more important mitzvah. Now he says like this. He says, and the same thing with avera d'oras avera. Because Benavis said like this: you should run to a small mitzvah, just like a very important mitzvah. Gorerach min avera. Why should mitzvah goreras mitzvah? V'avera gereras avera. So he says, what does it mean? Similarly with avera. Avera gereras avera, gam zem min hateva. This also is a natural thing. Why? Achash yosa avera achas. If a person does an avera, v'nisrachet nevodas Hashem yisbarach, and he is, because of the avera, he's removed from God, the worship of God. He sovel liyod avera acheras, af kiyene yetzim esavela, kevarishona yasana. So then when an avera which is more serious that he would not have done originally comes his way, he will do that avera too. He says because since he has followed the path of his evil inclination and he's already started to do something which is in a small way doing avera, so then he will continue to do an avera which is even more severe. Okay, what is the basic concept over here? Basic concept is the one that we mentioned several times, that the problem with a person, with a human being, is that when he does an action, you see, the action affects his nature. You can't just do an action which he remains free from. Because an action implicitly demands that a person must feel and suffer the effects of the action. Now, when a person does an avera, the whole question of the person's bechira is, what is the good? What is the good for man? You see, an animal only knows of the pleasurable and the painful, but man has a concept of the good. And even if a person should maintain that pleasure is that pleasure is something which he wants, he will always say that that is the good. He won't say he won't follow pleasure. An animal simply just does what is pleasurable. There's no reflection. But man, it's an impossibility. The moment he does an action, it must follow. Reflection must follow before, during, after. So if a person does an action which is evil, what is bad is not simply the performance, but there's an effect of the performance. The effect of the performance is that the action which he does because of his inclination is something which he feels, he senses, or tells him, the pleasure tells him that this is the good. And once it registers as the good, then he's in a bad way. But every action that a person does, he must justify. He has to think about it. It's like one philosopher said, every person is a metaphysician. Every person is by nature a metaphysician. That's what every does. He has to maintain either it's good or it's not good. So if a person does evil, so he must maintain, while doing that evil, he must maintain that it is the good. And since he maintains it's the good, so he has a value change. Actions result in a value, necessarily result in a value judgment. And it's precisely that value judgment which determines which direction he is going. So it is impossible for a person to do an evil action without, at the time that he does it, maintaining it's the good. And since he does maintain it's the good, so therefore he changes his value system, and that's what the Rabbeinu Yonah says, that after that he's subject to an avera which is more serious, which he wouldn't have done before, because the man has undergone a change of values. See, that's the Rabbeinu Yonah. Okay? The argument among the philosophers is whether knowledge would be able to prevent him from doing it, or even if he has the knowledge, will he not be, even if he has knowledge that it's evil, will he at that moment be, that knowledge will be cancelled out? But everybody agrees at the moment it's going to be cancelled. You see? But the argument among the philosophers, the ancient philosophers, was whether the reason why he does it is because he doesn't really have enough knowledge of why it's evil. You see? Or, no, even if he'd have the utmost knowledge as to why it's evil, still at that moment, well, that's what Aristotle's opinion was, that at that moment, it's like a person who's drunk, and at that moment, he loses mental faculties. So the power, the overpowering force of the emotion is so great that the function of his mental capacities at that moment, no matter how much knowledge he has, will be canceled, will cease to operate. So therefore, no matter how much knowledge he has of good and evil, he still will not be able to control himself. Or no, is it because of the fact that he really lacks knowledge in terms of good and evil that he can't control himself? But had he the perfect knowledge, did he have the real understanding of why it is evil, he would be able to overcome it. That's the that was a big argument among the ancients. It would seem in the light, yes. I would just say that it would seem that the answer, to me it seems the answer of the, in terms of the, what modern psychology would say about it would be on the side of Aristotle, basically. But with one difference. I think that is the answer that Yadis really gives. Because Yadis says, Barasi Yetzirah, the Gemara says, Barasi Torah Tavla. That God says, I created the evil inclination, and I also created Torah as medicine for that evil inclination. It would seem from the Gemara that the only medicine for evil is Torah, and Torah is knowledge. You see? Yet it would seem also that the question of the ancients seems to be correct. That a person can know. That's why we saw Solanta really start a shoot some muscles. So the person, see a person be a bucket of shas and have the worst meters. That's why we saw Solanta used to say that it's easier to learn from shas than to change one meter of a person. Yeah, Chazal seems to agree with that also, because Chazal said a person that's lomed lakanter is a person that learns just because he wants to show up somebody else. He wants to show his skill. Well, there's two levels there. One is to show that he's a great person. That's not so bad. But the other one is to destroy others. That's considered he's considered a hopeless human being. That he is simply his life is worthless. But it would seem that it would seem to be a contradiction to this. I believe the answer is like this. The answer is that there's two types of knowledge. See, Chazal say, when Chazal say Torah, Brasi Torah Tavlan, it doesn't just mean learning Bava Kama. Torah means the whole corpus of Torah. The whole corpus of Torah includes Mishlei, Kehelas, it includes Tehillim, it includes learning all the areas of the Nevi'im. You see, it includes, of course, the Chazal includes avos. What it means, barasi yitzhara, barasi taratavim, in my mind, means not barasi taratavim that I created just Torah itself. Your learning is a very important part of it. Learning Talmud Torah is definitely an important part. It plays a tremendous role. Because Talmud Torah is something which takes up, if a person learns Torah properly, it takes up the bulk of his psychic energy. You see? So therefore, the energy is removed from the desires. But it's not enough, we're saying. It's not enough. What is necessary is, Barasi Torah Tavim doesn't just mean Torah itself, the act of learning Torah, which is tremendous, and is a necessity without which you simply can't have any perfection. That goes without saying. Everybody agrees on that. That without Torah, without knowledge of Torah, there is no perfection. It is impossible. But what the Gemara means, Barasi Torah Tavim, the Gemara explains Tachbulos, that there's Tachbulos Ayetzah. Torah means knowledge, not only knowledge in abstract of what the good and what evil is, but also knowledge in particular insofar as the self is concerned. Because a large part of Torah has to do with knowledge insofar as a person's nature is concerned, like Avos, like Mishle, so that's the Kehelis, has to do with understanding the underlying emotions. And of course, that understanding has to be applied to the individual. It requires application. So there's two types of knowledge. There's knowledge in abstract of what good and evil is. A person without that knowledge can't do anything. He doesn't know what the good is in abstract. But besides that, there must be knowledge of the particular in terms of the individual himself. The application, understanding the nature of the Yetzer Hara, Tachbulos HaYetzer, which means the instinctual trends of man, and understanding and seeing it in himself what those trends are and how they function and how they operate. So the answer really is Yadus's answer to the ancient argument among the philosophers is that knowledge is the answer. It's true, but abstract knowledge alone will not be enough. Because even though a person may have a knowledge of an abstract of what good and what evil is, but the moment that his desires overpower him, he's not going to be able to, that knowledge will be lost. At that moment, that knowledge is canceled, and he will maintain that this particular action is good for him because he has to justify the action. He must justify the action. He must maintain this action is good at the time that he does it. A human being is bound by that dilemma. He cannot act unless he maintains that it is the good. He is bound to be a metaphysician, and that's what destroys him. So therefore, Yadus's answer is, it's Torah is the answer. But Torah means on two levels, in abstract and also in particular. You see? That's really the solution to the question, to the problem. Yes? Chazal answer the question. Chazal say, Malamit Shakulam Mitnu B'Sinai. What is Eila? Alpiyad Varma Eila. On the Pasuk, the Pasuk is in Shemos, in Mishpatim. So Chazal say, on the spot, Malamit Shakulam. Sinai, really, all those ideas are given. But they were formalized, you see, and placed in a body of Torah Shebiksav by later individuals, like Shlomo HaMelech, but David HaMelech. But those ideas were always there. Those ideas were given at Sinai. Many ideas go on the wayside, go by the wayside at different times, different societies, and it's necessary for the Chacham of the door to emphasize and to underline those knowledge, that knowledge, and to give them a certain form for the people. That has to do with the situation at the time. But the ideas of Shlomo HaMelech are not new ideas. The basic ideas are found straight through Torah. If you, the only thing is that that he wrote it at that time, Chiber Sforum Harbei. He wrote this form. That's the purpose, really, of a Bala Masorah. Why do you have these? Why do you have the Tanoim that they say Benazai have rusted Mitzvakala Kavachamura? You see, it was Moshe Rabbeinu who did it. What do you have Benazai for? The answer is because Benazai and his generation saw that this idea is not being viewed in terms of its importance, and therefore he emphasized it. That's every Bala Masorah has to do that. Every Balmasar has an obligation to emphasize to his generation where in the generation is lacking and which ideas of Torah they're missing. No idea. The funny thing is when a person does a good action and he overpowers his desires and he follows reason, then there's a certain satisfaction that he obtains out of that, and it emphasizes what the good is in his mind, underlines the good, what the good is in his mind, and leaves him open to doing more mitzvahs. That's what he said. And the avera side, the desire and the enjoyment of the satisfaction tells him that that is the good. He has a philosophical repression. What the Torah just maintains is one principle. The person, if he does an avera, is not the same person. And that's why you see in tshuva. What does Rambam say in tshuva? When a person does a tshuva gemura, so he should change his name, the Rambam says. And that's the whole idea of Shini Hashem. It's Kloma, Eini Yosoyish. I'm not the same person that did this avera before. It means that what is the definition of a person? A person is defined by his soul, by what his soul contains. And if his soul maintains a corrupt value, and now it changes to a value which is correct, it's a different soul, a different individual, not the same person. That's the Yisod Niyadis. A very changes the person, not just an action. It's a thing. Rashi says, it's Rashi in the Chumash, but he says first he shows that there's a system of deterioration. Rashi has, and he says first the Yetzirah tells. That's what Rashi says here too. That the Yetzirah, he said, Yetzirah, she came there, she Yetzirah, most of a whole life, like Shulba Verik Tel Tarim Adolam. It keeps on getting worse. So why can't a person make a bargain with the Yetzirah, go this far and not any further? It's an impossibility. Because the bargain was made with a different individual. The moment he indulges in the action, he's not the same person anymore. He can't, his second person can't keep this bargain. It's an impossibility. That's what it means that a Ruts Limus Vakalak Bachamura. But now the Ibn Ezra goes on. There's a second part to the memory which disturbed the Rabbeinu Yonah. Second part to the memory which disturbed the Rabbeinu Yonah. Why? Because it says, after this, it says like this. If it would have stopped there, it's fine. Nice concept, nice idea. But he goes on. He says, Sheshchar mitzvah mitzvah. Sheshchar avera avera. What does this mean? The reward for a mitzvah is a mitzvah. And the reward for an avera is an avera. What does it mean? It's a strange statement. What do you mean the reward for a mitzvah is a mitzvah? The reward for, if you're saying, because mitzvah gereres mitzvah, said that already. Mitzvah gereres mitzvah. But what does it mean, the schar mitzvah mitzvah? So Rabbeinu Yonah didn't want to accept that it's repetition. What he maintained is that it's a totally different idea. And it's an interesting thing that he says. He says like this. He says, Sheshchar mitzvah mitzvah says, Zeu tam achar min ha-teva. Before we were discussing the natural man in terms of his nature, the way he is according to psychological rules and principles, what he is naturally. Because Yadis maintains that man has a certain nature, and Yadis looks at the world in terms of the way things are. That's the first way for a person, for a chacham, to analyze anything, to study nature, study what there is, what the given is, and to work within that framework. That's the first step that a person must make, to recognize reality and work within reality. That's kala karakula. We're not mystics. We don't just say that things work mystically, but there's a system, and there's a law, and there's an order, and the psyche works in a certain way. We must understand it, and we must manipulate whatever the psyche towards the good. He has to be able to control it, so you have to look rationally and understand the human mind. So Rabbeinu Yonah says, up till now, that's what the memory dealt with. But now we're going into another area. He says, this is Zeo Tam Acher Min HaTeva. This is different than the natural approach. First we take the natural approach. Okay. But now he says there's something else beyond the natural approach. And it's an interesting thing that he says. He says, interesting thing. He says, all man has is free will. God gave man free will. What does free will mean? Free will means, without getting into a question of philosophical question of free will, just let me just give you just a basic definition of what free will is. I think it's important that you have a definition of free will, or at least a description of what exactly is meant by it. The best way to define free will is the way the Rambam did in the Yad HaZaka with this question. And that means simply that everything that every individual does during his lifetime, every performance that man has done, individually or collectively, was not preordained from the beginning of the creation. That's what it means. It means to say that every book that was written and every idea or every deed that man has done was not simply an acting out of all the elements that were placed in the universe in the first moment of creation. If you say man has no free will, you're going to have to say that everything that was ever done by man is simply was already preordained, predestined. From the moment, first moment of creation, everything was done. Every word that was written, every deed that was done was simply just an acting out of a result, a direct result of the first moment of creation when all the elements in nature were brought together. Okay? Yad just maintains that man has a creative role. Has a creative role. Which means to say that he has a creative role. It means that it wasn't predestined. That the first moment of creation didn't carry in it every single result that we see that man has done. That's basically what free will means. It means that he's a creative being. Okay. And the world's justice is based upon the way they feel. They have no rational system to consult to know when an action is good or when an action is evil, so they go by the way they feel. So they feel murder is bad, so they say it's bad. But then you have problems with that, because sometimes you have the feeling and it's a different case, so you have problems with that. But in Yadis, of course, murder is evil for a rational reason, not because of an emotional reason. The reason is because it's God's creation, and man has no right to change that which is not his. And it's God's will that things should be such. If man makes a change, so then it's evil. But it's based upon an idea, not upon the fact that murder is detestable emotionally. Chaim said, that's what it means. Estakel b'ra'as v'bo alma means that God made man's emotions in many areas in line with the reality. The ethical reality, which is rational, is many times we find that instinctually there is a... the instinct corresponds to the ethical reality. So Chaim said that's what it means, Estakel b'ra'as v'bo alma. So that's the way he explained it, Chazal. But the idea, if you're talking about foreknowledge, that's a different thing. The fact that God knew in advance, you see, what is going to occur, so how is it possible for God to know in advance what's going to occur if man did not make that change, did not determine yet which way he would go? Because since you're going to say there's no determinism, so how could God know in advance if there's no deterministic cause yet? Yeah, that the Rambam deals with that question. But the answer the Rambam gives is that God's knowledge is not based upon causality. But the idea that the Torah literally was written before the creation is not not something which is... should be accepted in a factual way. It's a chazal. You have to understand a chazal, the midrash. Okay. So I'll just say one thing about free will. I didn't need to go into it because it's a very emotionally packed area. But I would say just the one thing that insofar as the question of free will, see. Emotionally, people look at it caught in both of them. Just to say that everything that was ever done by man, every creator, every word of literature that ever was written was already incorporated in the first moment of creation, it sounds a little absurd. On the other hand, to say that that man has free will and things aren't determined also sounds absurd, because we're used to determinism. You see, so that's why you have philosophers arguing both ways, big arguments, a lot of difficulties involved too. Because you say he has no free will, so the question is, how can man tell himself he's going to do something? Because he can't do it. He can't do it anyways. You know, a lot of different problems. I would just say one thing: the basic problem of causality is not really, strictly speaking, philosophically a question, because of the fact that I'm not going to go, but it's the same. It's the concept, the same concept that you have philosophically. Question is a question people ask, and so people that came up with a question because of that question. They said, "How could you say that God is the cause? The reason why you say that there is a God is because you say there is an ultimate cause." And the question is, then who caused God? So you say there is no ultimate cause. Yeah, but the answer to that is what the ancients already knew the answer to that question. The answer is that when we say that a thing has a cause, what we mean by that is that its existence is not necessary. It could exist, it could not exist. And something had to act on it in order to bring it into existence. In relation to God, there's no such thing. You say God's nature, so to speak. I mean, all the terms I use, of course, are homonymous, because you can't use any terms with relation to God unless the words and terms we use are borrowed, but that's the best we can do. It's God's nature, so to speak, to exist. You can't ask a question. You can ask a question, why is this glass of water on the table? But you can't ask a question, why is water wet? Because it's the nature of water to be wet. So the moment you have something that is its inherent nature, that's the end of the question. So therefore, why God exists is not a legitimate question, because that is the very answer. That the idea of God is that there must be some necessary existence, something whose nature it is to exist. Otherwise, you couldn't have existence. Of course, you can't go back ad infinitum. You see? There can't be infinite regression. You say, well, this cause was something else. And what was the cause of that? So you must have something whose nature it is to exist. Its existence is necessary. And from that thing, from that point, existence can begin. And that necessary existence is what Yadus says is God. You see? Ekya Asher Ekya. Ho Yehovah V'yiya. Yudke Vokke. The term Yudke Vokke implies that idea. Necessary existence. That is, so you can't question why God exists. That's his nature, his essence is to exist. And so there's no more question as to the causality. Now the question of free will requires a similar answer. You can't ask the question, why, how could you have an action that has no cause? It's not the action doesn't lack a cause. The cause of the action is man. That's the cause of the action. You'll ask me, but what causes man's will to go this way or that way? The answer is, if you say that there's Bechira Chafshis, you're saying his nature is to choose. If it's his nature to choose, then you can't ask the question why he chooses anymore, because that's his nature. Okay? All right. Rabbeinu says, so he says that God gave man Bechira. God gave man Bechira. What is after man chooses one way, after man does make a choice, he chooses one way, so if he goes in the way that is correct, and God is with him, v'chi yasa mitzvah achas mitzayas oso lasos mitzvah cheres, ki b'fnei atzmo en lo yecholet, gam lehetev, al zeh nemar sheschar mitzvah schar vera vera. He says that if man chooses the right course, so then God is with him, and then God will help him to do another mitzvah, okay? And so it is. The lo chas v'sholom shezeh svarah says, you shouldn't chas v'sholom interpret the memory that means shtar mitzvah, that the reward for a mitzvah, that you're going to get another mitzvah. He says, that would mean there's no reward. He says, shim kei maschar yeshlo. What kind of reward is there? There's never any reward. It's an infinite postponement of his shtar. What's the shtar? This mitzvah. What's the shtar? Next mitzvah. There's never any reward. He says, chas v'sholom. It's impossible. He says, because Kisrar Kayim Alo Mobile, a Sharat Salama says, what he means says like this, that Schar Mitzvah means, he says, V'ochel Perseh B'Alam Azeshim Mitzayes Oso Lasos Mitzvah Cheras. He says, pre Mitzvah means like this, Vocho Perse Bolomazesh, and it says as well as Mizrachesh. And into a Karen Misrabe, the Kayam Bolomabo. So he says like this. Ischara Vera Vera, and Bokras and Mobus for Sarah, and man chose the wrong path. So he says, Vosa Vera, Achas, a Kodesh Bokham, a Srachek, me menu, ume nicho, and Moser also be at Tivo Hara. That is, that if a man does evil, that God leaves him to his own evil nature. They allow him to do another avera. And he's incapable of changing. The person wants volatile. The person wants to do good, so they help him. So God helps him. Yeah. But if he wants to do evil, so they open the door for him. Shem bolatame ain't messiah or so. It doesn't say, it says a bolatahir, a person that wants to do good, so messiah or so. They help him. But a bolatame, it doesn't say messiah or so that they help him. But post him, they open it up for him. You see? Poschen harbe, aber poschen harbe, yeshlo likonis ben, lahora, ki menichin oso lasos hayosho beinav. They permit him to do that which is yosho, correct, in his eyes. No one does that which is evil. Everyone does which is correct, but it's in his eyes. Valzem moshlo chazam, moshlo mordavadam, lorim shalokachas aneft, a person that bought kerosene, when he wants to measure the kerosene, so they tell him, measure it yourself, because it has a bad odor. But that's the way the Rosh Hashanah are. After they choose the bad way, so they leave him alone. Leave him alone. God will not help a person do evil? That doesn't make any sense. But the tzaddik chooses the correct way, God helps him. So a person that bought something which has a good fragrance to it, so when he goes to measure it, they say, we'll measure it for you. Okay. So what is he saying, Rabbeinu Yonah? Rabbeinu Yonah is saying as follows. That it's an interesting thing. There's another chazal also. The Gemara says, Sofa Rasha Latzadik Mavake Shlamiso. Gemara says in Kedushin. The Russia looks at the tzaddik and wants to destroy him. And if God didn't help him, he would not be able to be successful against the Russia. You want to say, which Russia is this? Russia doesn't mean a personality. It means the evil inclination itself. Evil itself. That's what he's saying, basically. What he's saying is that it's an interesting thing. But what he's saying is that insofar as man is concerned, that man's nature is very overpowering. And if it wasn't for the fact that there is a special hashgacha for an individual who chooses the good, it means to say that the moment the person chooses the good, that God assists him, there's a special hashgacha that assists him to find the good in his particular situation. You see? A bolatar messiah. That's what Ben Yonah says. So Ben Yonah says, and this is not a question of a nace, but it's something which is built into the teva, which means to say, I don't mean built into the teva as far as natural law is concerned, but it's a phenomena which is not within, not from within his nature, but it's a yesod in yados. Which means to say that if man raises himself to the level where he's searching for the good, then he comes in contact with the paths of the Ashgacha. And the Ashgacha assists him personally to be able to come across various situations and to be able to be successful in completing his intentions. That's a ball of time messiah. So a Russia, if a person chooses to do evil, then they allow him, menichim law. It means they allow him to go according to the natural law. But the statement maintains an interesting thing, which is that if man alone, you see, it's an interesting thing, but Chazal always maintained that the evil part, the dark side of human nature, is much more powerful than people imagine. That's what Chazal always maintained. That there's a part of human nature, the dark side of human nature, is extremely powerful. People don't realize what it is. And Gemara says that even at loss of love, God will show what the Yetzer really is. Which means to say we don't understand. We don't even know how deep and how powerful those forces are within our nature. Once loss of love, God will show how it works. But basically, what it's saying is that if it wasn't for that element of Hashgacha, that when man makes that choice, he raises himself to a different level, and he uses the Bechira, which means he uses his Tzelem Elokim, that part of his nature which reflects God's Chachma, he moves towards God's Chachma, he moves in that direction, so then he is in a special relationship with God because of that move. And because he is in this relationship, that's why he partakes of Hashgacha. That's really the Rambam's concept of Hashgacha in the Gemara Nevuchim, which is basically that Hashgacha is not a supernatural phenomenon like a Nes in Mitzrayim. Nes in Mitzrayim was a supernatural phenomenon. But Hashgacha isn't that way. Because it says, the others had Hashgacha. But the Shmi Hashem that's Mofsim with the change in laws of nature, that only Moshe Rabbeinu was able to perform. But the idea of Hashgacha means that is the way the world, that is the way God relates to man. It's inherent in the relationship between God and man. But if man makes a move towards God, it means he makes a move towards Chochmas Hashem, then he relates to God in a special way wherein the Hashgacha is a natural result. That's the Rambam in the mind of the Gemara. So Hashgacha we don't consider to be an ace. Hashgacha is different than an ace. Hashgacha is a built-in relationship between man and God. A different thing. An ace means that God does an action which temporarily changes the laws of nature. It's a supernatural phenomenon. That's not that's something which was done at certain times, like the Ramban says, God will not do this for every generation or for every fool to show that he exists, but only at specific, only very few times in history was that done, only in order to establish Yadus. And after that, that was it. But Hashgacha is a constant phenomenon. Hashgacha is a relationship between man and God. Chazal say the same thing. Chazal say that that's what the Gemara means. El mole HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ozro. What does it mean? It means to say that the only reason that man can be successful in doing the good, because if you look at man per se, if you just study man, you discover that the evil part of his nature is so overpowering that he would not have a chance to live a good life, an ethically perfected life. The only way he could do it is through the intervention of Hashgacha, and it's not an ace. And this is part of the relationship between your soul and it's actually like the yisod and the dust. It's part of the relationship between man and God. That's what the Rabbeinu Yonah says. So Rabbeinu Yonah explains the memory as follows: that the memory was set on two levels. First, Ben Azai said that shem mitzvah goreis mitzvah. That was on the natural level, natural psychological phenomena. You see. The second part of the memory is metaphysical. Sheschar mitzvah mitzvah schar avera avera. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. That's a metaphysical phenomenon, which means to say that insofar as man approaches God, so he enjoys a special relationship with the Creator, and because of that, there's a special hashgacha which causes certain events to occur in his life, or places before him certain possibilities which make it more easy for him to follow the good. That's where Hashgacha is. That's what I mentioned many times, that people always say that something's Basher. Basher, it's very nice to say if you did a mitzvah and you really rose to a higher level, then you should say it's Basher. But just because a person has something which he considers good because of his desires, because of his Yetzer Hara, that's not Basher, that's just a That's just on the contrary. That's just an emotional reaction to his own egocentricity. The person made a lot of money, he says, Bashir, make some money. The person did something came about that he wanted emotionally. That's not Bashir. That's simply, he's just simply catering to his own egocentricity. Where should a person say Bashir? A person should say Bashir if he came across something that gave him perfection, some knowledge, some ideas, which bring him closer to God, and he sees the chain of events that occurred, then he has the right to say his Bashir.
Okay. Any questions?
I would say that modern psychology, to a certain extent, has uncovered some of this phenomenon, where even where they show that the unconscious forces of man are basically self-centered and selfish and egoistic, aggressive and libidinous, and they show that the extent of these aggressive and libidinous instincts in man are not realized by the conscious. The conscious mind does not realize the extent, but these things exist in like a subterranean type of existence. Where they don't see the light of day, and the individual is not aware of them, but there are ways to discover their nature. There are ways to discover, to an extent, what they are. But basically, that's what Yadis maintained. You see, Yadis always maintained that way. That there's an unconscious part of the human mind which draws man to evil. That's why you have, for instance, you say in the morning, that was a tefillah that Chazal said in Gemara Brachas. Gemara Brachas says that. It means to say that they recognized that they prayed, their tefillah was that they shouldn't fall prey to the unconscious part of their nature which they have no control of, which can lead them to evil. You see? So there always was a recognition in Yadis among the Chachmei Yisrael, always recognized that the part of man, the part of man which is evil is not necessarily the part that he recognizes, not only the part that he recognizes, but it is much deeper. Much deeper. Yes. Under Hashgacha, right. Under Hashgacha doesn't mean that he's just under the Hashgacha and therefore everything's wonderful. What it means is that certain fortuitous events are placed before him in order for him to be able to continue to exercise his Bechira. That's what it means. It doesn't mean simply that he's given a gift. Yes. The part is the part that's Masik Chachmas Hashem. The evil part is the instinctual part of his nature. That's why Chazal say that the idea of Bar Mitzvah, that at the time of Bar Mitzvah is when the Yetzer HaTov first appears on the scene, whereas the Yetzer HaRa, the evil, existed until Bar Mitzvah. Even though a child may be seen to us to be very good, on the contrary, but it's not true, because anything that goes good is purely instinctual. The good part of man is the part of the Seichel, and the Seichel only gains a certain amount of control, of predominance, at the age of puberty, the age of Bar Mitzvah. Before that time, he has very little control. He may be intelligent, but he can't exercise any control over himself. That's why the Yetzer HaTov enters at the age of Bar Mitzvah. They say, is man inherently good or inherently evil? You have to say that there's two parts to his nature. There's the instinctual part, which causes evil, and then there is the part of Chachma, which is the good. The only thing is that Chazal say that the instinctual part is so overpowering that it would prevent a person from really reaching any high level of perfection if it wasn't for the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Ozro, and that as he exercises Bechira, the Hashgacha places certain situations before him that he can continue to exercise his Bechira and reach great heights. But without that, the instinctual part would take over totally. That's what Chazal said. Yes? Hashgacha means that Hashgacha is based on one thing, on Tzelem Elokim. That because man has a Tzelem Elokim, there's an inherent relationship between him and God because of his nature. It's not because of it. It's not innate. It's not that God does an action. It is because of his Tzelem Elokim that he inherently has a relationship to God. That's why a person should run to a mitzvah kala to Bachamura, because insofar as he runs to a mitzvah kala, it means he's doing an act of perfecting himself. and he's exercising his bechira. So therefore, he opens up the hashgacha. First of all, he opens up his own nature, through his own nature. That's natural. And secondly, insofar as he opens up the situation for his relationship to God, it's a metaphysical phenomenon also. And therefore, he's capable of improving himself further. That's basic memory. Yeah, for some reason, at least you should have some idea of what is going on in the Megillah. So last week we spoke a little bit about it.
What did we say?
Then, after I just